This episode of The Yarn is sponsored by Heinemann and their professional book, Read the World, Rethinking Literacy for Empathy and Action in a Digital Age. Colby talked with co-author Kristen Zimke about the book.
This book is about technology in the classroom. You know, we feel like maybe the last few years, people have gotten distracted by all the things. And when we look at what we should be doing with kids, it's not about the things, but it's really about helping kids tell their story. It's about helping kids hear the stories of others. We really hope that educators can start seeing these devices as empathy machines and leveraging them to do good in the world and be used as tools for thinking.
Technology can be a force for good in the classroom. Read the World, Rethinking Literacy for Empathy and Action in a Digital Age, will show you how. Visit Heinemann.com to learn more and order a copy. Welcome to The Yarn, a School Library Journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. Of all the books I read in 2020, none stood out more than Mike Corrado's YA graphic novel, Flamer. It's an unflinching yet hopeful coming-of-age story that hits on themes of self-image and identity. It's a book I hope lots of kids get a chance to read. I jumped at the chance to sit down with Mike Corrado over Zoom to learn more about how the book came to be. So, let's begin. It's time to unravel Flamer. How would you describe the book? What would you say it's about?
Well, Flamer is the story of a 14-year-old, half Filipino, half white kid named Aiden Navarro. And it's the summer before high school, and he's away at a scout camp. And he is juggling a lot. He's dealing with friendships and bullies, how sometimes friendships and bullying can intersect. He's got questions about religion and grappling with his racial identity and racism, dealing with his body image. And all of that really intense stuff is the background to him confronting his sexual identity.
Do you remember kind of like getting the first initial idea for the book? I mean, has this been something that has been kind of on the back burner for a long time? Or
It is. It's been a long time coming. I don't remember when I had the very initial idea, but I started kind of writing it in about 2011, I think. And it was just, you know, just ideas. And then I really set myself to finishing the manuscript in 2014 or 15 and sold it pretty soon after I finished writing it. So then I had other projects that were being prioritized. It's with the same publisher as Little Elliot, Laura Godwin at Henry Holt. So I had a few books for her. I was illustrating some books for other publishers. And so finally, like maybe 2 years ago or a little over 2 years ago, I got to finally start working on the illustrations for Flamer.
Was it something where there was sort of like an early version that ended up kind of evolving quite a bit? Or was it something where once you kind of had your direction, you started getting it down on paper that it kept that form?
Yeah, it's very close to where it started. We barely changed anything, honestly. I mean, I changed the intro to the book because I felt like it just wasn't working. And Laura agreed, and you know, so I tried to figure out something maybe a little more poetic of an opening, and then everything else was more like grammar and logistics, making sure all the loose ends were tied up. But it's very true to its original form.
It's funny how that works sometimes. It's like sometimes you hammer away and hammer away at a story. And I mean, obviously you were working on that for years before you finally got to that finished point. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of work and probably subconscious work that goes on during that time until you finally get that time to really sit down and attack it.
Yeah.
But it is funny how sometimes those stories, the first version of it is kind of the best version.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the story, even though it's fictional, is based on my own personal experiences. So I think I was at an advantage where, I mean, I wasn't want for content, right? I just kept writing about things I remembered, things I felt, things I still feel, and kind of fitting it into a structure. And while the writing part, you know, kind of just came without too much digging. I mean, there was digging, but I would say the illustration was actually harder to nail down than the writing was. It took me a really long time to develop the style for this because I wanted something that matched the feeling of the story.
Yeah, I mean, and this is your first graphic novel, you know. So can you sort of walk me through, like, going from picture books to going to a graphic novel? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, it was quite a leap. It didn't take too long for me to realize, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. Because, you know, I was a comic nerd as a kid. And so I'm like, you know, I've read so many comics and read so many graphic novels and I'm up to date on everything. And I read all the, you know, the seminal classics and the how-to books. But then when you're in it, it's way different, right? It's when it's like, okay, there's still a learning curve here. Some things that really served me well that I learned in making picture books is the page turn, right? That was one of my strengths going into it. So at least with every spread, I had some kind of anchor point where it's like, okay, well, I know visually I need to turn that page. So I felt like that was pretty good. But something that was really eluding me was making room for type, which really frustrated me because I was a graphic designer for, you know, over 10 years before I got into publishing. And I could not wrap my brain around making room for word bubbles and how much type would fit into those word bubbles. It just a different animal. So when my assistant and I first laid out the book, you know, just kind of put placement type in all the panels, we discovered quickly that there was not enough room. So we actually added 30 pages to the book to make it fit, which is interesting because I can't envision the book being shorter than it is now. So I think it was a great exercise in learning how to give some scenes some breathing room also.
So when you say added 30 pages, like
visually,
so what does that look like? What does that mean for you? Like you're expanding scenes to make them
right
longer?
Exactly. So basically, you know, say you have like a jumble of type and it's supposed to go in this one little panel, it's taking up all the room in the panel and there's no room for the illustration. So now it's like, okay, so this one panel is actually going to be three panels.
Okay.
And what could the character or characters be doing within those panels instead of the one, you know, face with the word bubble? So I think it was good, and you know, in the long run, that kind of gave the characters also more stage time to express themselves with their body language or give other visual cues or metaphors in the background.
Yeah. That's probably something that you're just so not used to coming from picture books, where it's like,
right,
you have this many pages, you may not expand beyond that many.
It was, I mean, it's liberating, right? When you're not confined to 32 or 40 pages, it's like, oh, you just keep on adding. I mean, you still have to adhere to signatures of 8, but I mean, 8 pages when it comes to about 360 pages, it's like a drop in the bucket. It's like, well, we can work, or, you know, we can figure that out. But at the same time, yeah, it was just hard to say. I mean, people would ask me like, oh, you know, how long is this book going to be? I'm like, I have no idea. And they're like, why don't you know? I'm like, I just won't know until it's all sketched out finally. And even then, I still don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. So what was the very first thing when you first were writing down ideas for the book? Where did you begin? Was there a certain scene or certain part of the story, or did you just start where Flamer begins?
Well, I did like a sample scene when I handed off the manuscript, and it was the scene where Aiden and Elias are in a tent, and they're talking about this girl that Elias has a crush on. So Elias, Aiden discovers in the book, is his crush. And it's this cute scene. And it was one of the scenes that I envisioned really early on. So I felt really comfortable exploring with that. And two characters that I kind of had a general sense of what they would look like. And there's an X-Men reference in it. So so it was all fun stuff that I could kind of dive into and get excited about.
What was it like pulling things from your own life? You know, I'm sure that a lot of people have probably asked you this question when this book has been coming out. It is always just kind of a fascinating thing, I think, to think, you know, how much do you share? Are there things that you keep to yourself? Are there, you know, how did that push and pull kind of work?
Yeah. It's challenging, of course, because I've never felt so exposed in my life. I mean, it is fictional, but yeah, there are some things that are just kind of taken, you know, from my memory. Yeah, I don't know. I think for as nervous as I was for publication, I feel like the payoff has been worth it. Like hearing how much the book is resonating with people and how people are saying that they feel really seen. I mean, that's the whole point of making this, right? Is to have more representation. I mean, queer youth are so underrepresented in youth literature. And you know, while I haven't heard from many youth, I mean, the book hasn't been out that long, I've gotten lots of feedback from queer grownups who are saying, oh, this is the book I wish I had when I was Aiden's age. And that was the impetus for writing this. I wish I had this book when I was 14. And even though it's set in 1995, there's a lot of common elements, I think, in the queer experience that are still relevant today.
How cool that you get to write this book and to share that, the book that you wish that you had. Like, that's what a meaningful thing. Like, how cool is that to do? Like, that's just has to, it just has to feel really meaningful.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm so grateful that I got to do it and that my publisher has been behind me 100%. And that it's like out in the world now and accessible. I didn't want it to be just about the struggle, and I didn't want it to be just kind of a light, hopeful book. Because of the content of the book, I mean, it has to be intense.
Yeah, it's like that balance between the light and dark moments that I think if you get it right, it has so much impact.
Right. And I mean, even you just saying light and dark, I mean, that was the whole idea behind the use of color in the book. Everything's black and white, very stark. And then you have the visual thread of fire and, you know, some objects that are red or orange that have some kind of significance. I use that as both a visual device, a communicative device, but also just to represent that starkness of emotions.
Did you have that idea for the colors in the book pretty early on, or did that come later?
Yeah, that was one of the original ideas when I started working on the illustration style. I mean, the sample that I was talking about earlier that I sent in was black and white with a touch of color, but it was much more polished, maybe more like my Little Elliot work, which did not fit the story at all. So it took me a while to kind of cut loose and find kind of a rougher visual style.
Oh, isn't that so funny? It's like you have to like unlearn what you've learned a little bit, you know, to make it looser, right?
Yeah, it was interesting because I actually looked at some really old work that I did in college when I was being really experimental, and you know, I didn't have a specific style. I was doing what I was supposed to do in school, which is just everything, just try everything out and see what works. And you know, I made some pretty angsty stuff. So as I was kind of channeling my younger self, and there were definitely some pieces that dealt with identity and being closeted, and those pieces really helped inform what ended up in the book. As a former camper and as a former counselor, I mean, there's so much that happens in one day of camp. It's so much drama. You know, you wake up in the morning, you could be at the top of your game. Come lunchtime, you're nobody. Like, all of your social status has been stripped away from you. And then come campfire, everyone's like, yeah, never mind, it's cool. Like, we're all cool. All right. And then, you know, the wheel turns again. It's just like, it's exhausting from both sides of it.
It's like you're living a whole life in a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What's your hope for the book?
I mean, my biggest hope for the book is that it gets into the hands of the people who really need it. A spoiler alert about the book is that there is suicide ideation. Queer identified or questioning youth are at much higher risks of suicide, self-harm, homelessness than their straight peers. And if that queer youth is trans and or a person of color, those risks start increasing exponentially. And I really want this book to be a lifeline to people who feel like there's no place for them in this world. You know, I want it to be something they can hold on to until they find their community. I mean, I think that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Mike Corrado, for the interview. Thank you, Steve Ramitar, for making it happen. Thank you, Philip Stead, for our theme music. Additional music for this episode by Longbeard from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.